Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another Hard Truth, where I'm delighted to be joined, as always, by my good friend, Alana Mercer. Hi, Alana.
Hi, David. It's so good to see you. How are
you? Yes, and I'm very well, thank you. Yes, I'm managing to survive World War III so far, Alana, so everything's pretty good.
And I believe you. We congratulate you on becoming a grandpa again.
Yeah, that is the big thing that's happened to me since you and I got together. I became a grandfather again with a little granddaughter, and that's my second granddaughter. And yeah, it's a big moment. And actually, it doesn't just finish there, Alana, because all things being equal, I will become a grandfather for the fourth time. Next
You're
month.
A blessed man. You're a blessed man.
I've got grandkids coming out of the all corners of the room, but it certainly keeps you young and lively, you know, becoming a grandparent. So that's been the big thing in my life. So what about you? How have things been since we spoke back?
Good, yeah. My new book, we haven't spoken since this has been published.
Yep, there we go. The Paleo Libertarian Guide to Deep Tech, Deep Pharma. I love all your expressions, Alana. The book's worth buying just for the title, basically.
David, definitely very germane always.
Yep.
In the wake of COVID, basically how cherished natural and constitutional rights have been sundered by entities whose market penetration and capitalization equals very many countries combined. Yeah. And I believe that lately I heard that one of our Supreme Court justices was ignorant. I don't know if you heard Ketanji Brown speak about freedom of speech.
Yeah.
She was not aware that our Bill of Rights is intended to curb government power, because she asks one of the people presenting her briefs in one of the recent cases, how is government going to control speech? So this is very relevant, and it also speaks to the aberrant economy that has developed around these status corporations who act for the state and speak like the state.
Well, I think, Alana, one of the things that we need actually is to have books like your new book, because, you know, the problem is when people go to get information and inform themselves, there's not that many places they can go, not as many as they should be able to go. So I was particularly pleased that you've got this one out. I know you've got more underway also.
Next is foreign policy, and that's a good segue to today's segment. Yeah.
Yes, well, and with that, Alana, thanks so much for lining that one up. Obviously, the big thing that's happened, well, there's been several big things, but the biggest thing as we speak today is, well, Iran and Israel and all the shenanigans that are going on over there. Because, I mean, obviously, the last few times we've chatted about what's been going on between Israel and Gaza and Hamas and all that, we've seen that.
Israel and the people of Gaza, I think it's been established pretty much that it's Israel against the civilian population of Gaza, and that's what they call a war.
Well, we've talked about it. And this, to me, Alana, and I don't know what you think about it, with Iran and Israel. I mean, let's start at the top. So we had the attempted, it was not attempted. We had the bombing of the Iranian embassy in Syria, which resulted in the death, I believe, of some what's euphemistically called military officers, but nonetheless, human beings were killed in that bombing. And Iran said they would retaliate, and we've seen the retaliation now play out, and now it's suggested that Israel might retaliate back there. So let's start at the top. How do you interpret, Alana, what we're seeing unfolding between these two powers?
Well, I need to ask you, why euphemistic? Just as when Trump eliminated one of the top generals of the Iranian Guard, the Revolutionary Guard, and I absolutely was appalled that America took it upon itself, the divine right without due process to execute people in all corners of the world. These were senior military commanders. How would we feel if Lloyd Austin was eliminated together with other generals? I think another six Syrian civilians.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
And another major general eliminated on what is supposed to be sovereign territory, an embassy and a consulate. So I think Iran retaliated in a just and measured way, I think. I mean, you might disagree with me, and that's why we go back and forth. But I think, but in any case, although Israel would love this to become about Iran and Israel, it is against the backdrop of industrial-scale mass murder in Gaza, and that's how we got here.
Do you see Iran as the aggressor or the victim?
Oh, I wouldn't say definitely victim. I mean, I don't want to put it in those terms, but definitely as the party aggressed against. It's manifestly obvious. Isn't that obvious to you? It has also been subjected to decades of assassinations. I think I had a list of, even recently there was a sort of a gas pipe explosion in a natural gas explosion earlier this year. Mm. Is when it's unattributed, you know, it's Israel. Always assassinations on Iranian soil of scientists, some of them not involved with nuclear technology, and cyberspace, cyber terrorism ongoing all the time. There was this Stuxnet virus, the STARS virus, all kinds of malware. In addition, all kinds of assaults on their government and on their sovereign territory on Iranian soil. So this is something Israel is famous for. So obviously the retaliation of Iran, to my mind, is justified, measured, because I don't think Israel told them, the generals and the commanders in Damascus, to evacuate before they struck, did they?
No.
Iranians broadcast that they were going to retaliate. It was demanded for stability of the mullahs and the state, because the people were absolutely infuriated by this action as well as by Gaza. Mm. And Iran stated Article 51 of the UN Charter said, we're legal here, we're on legal grounds, and as far as we're concerned, after what looked like quite an impressive display, I thought, we're done. They said, we're finished, the matter is concluded. Can you get more decent than that, David?
Well, those are very interesting points, and I kind of agree. I do agree with you, in fact, that I think, well, several things. First of all, the response from Iran, it wasn't very effective, was it? I mean, the drones could just about make it to Israel.
You think?
Well, the drones, yeah, it was a pretty pathetic display, I thought.
I thought it was impressive.
It wasn't impressive because it didn't succeed in causing much damage, if that was what the objective was.
Well, no.
That's
how I think how decent it was, because they directed it into the...
Yeah.
Where was the Nevatim? It was all directed to Nevatim military installation from whence the attack on the Damascus embassy or consulate came. So it was all directed there, and a third of the missiles were intercepted by, or so we are told by official mainstream media. Mm. A third was stopped by the United States, the UK as well, I think. Mm. France and even Jordan helped the Israelis. So imagine what would have happened had Iran not had the decency to broadcast the operation.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Everyone scrambled to block it.
Yeah, although I have to say, I was annoyed that the UK got involved and sent RAF jets. It's not my problem. I don't think they should be doing that.
Well, you're
UK,
right. Yeah.
yeah, I totally
I mean,
disapprove of
imagine
that.
if the United States was not there to bleed off any tension, as you call it, regional tension, then the parties might have gotten together and hammered out regional agreements,
Which is something you and I have talked about here in the past. We talked about the fact that if the West and particularly the US could keep out of these things, then regional powers like Iran, like Israel, would have no option but to sort things out between themselves. And how they do that, I don't even care. But there's a greater likelihood of them doing this. But here's the question, Alana. I don't think that. I think the US sitting in the background here, like a dark shadow over the whole place. The US would have known exactly what Iran was going to do. The US might well give the green light to Israel to strike Iran again. That's where I get worried, because that's a point of
Well,
escalation.
Biden said no. Biden has had no influence, has been willing to exert no leverage on Israel. And let's not forget, this is all against the backdrop of during the, I think it was the 13th and 14th of April when Iran let the United States know, it let the world know that it would be retaliating. And apparently it did get let the United States know. And against the backdrop of the mass murder in Gaza, let's not forget that 100, at least 100 people and a mass grave was uncovered during the time that Iran had launched these very slow drones and ballistic cruise missiles. It was theater over 2 days intended to make a point. But you're right. Will it change the balance of power so long as the United States is bleeding off like a pressure cooker? It's bleeding off the tension in the region, and the Western powers are just stooges, absolutely sock puppet Sunak. Should we call him sock puppet Sunak?
Oh, he's appalling, absolutely appalling. But I think you're right, Alana. You used the word theater there, and I completely agree with that. I look upon this as precisely that theater. I don't think this is going to be World War III. I don't think that for one moment. Unless I'm misreading it cataclysmically badly. I think it's theater for the masses. And I think the US approves of the theater for the masses. And as you say, it's a distraction in all kinds of ways. I don't actually believe we're going to see it, a mushroom cloud over Jerusalem or Tehran. Do you?
Speaking about clouds above structures, I think it was particularly ridiculous for the Israeli, a most stupid, crass ambassador, Gilad Erdan. I don't know if you saw his little.
We've got the clip. We've got the
Oh,
clip.
yes.
Do you want to do? Well, we'll play the clip and then tell us what you think. This is good, everyone. Watch this. This is the Israeli ambassador.
Colleagues, last night, Iran proved again that it cares nothing, nothing for Islam or Muslims.
But you should have shown the when he shoves the tablet in the face of the Iranian ambassador and says, "Look, look." Because there was, because we were speaking about, you said a mushroom cloud above Tel Aviv or Jerusalem, but there was a. If yeah, look, look, but you can see there's a spark above the Al-Quds Al-Aqsa Mosque. And my husband and I were watching this, and Sean is an RF expert, a top-notch RF expert, and I saw his jaw drop, and I said, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that the absolute fraud, if such a display of projectiles explodes in the sky, you can superimpose any building or city, and it will show above the entire country. It doesn't mean that that was, so Sean was saying exactly, the bloody moron. He thinks everybody's so stupid, and especially the Iranians are pretty scientifically minded.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
The things were headed not over Al-Aqsa, and the spark you showed was just the picture of the Al-Aqsa mosque against the backdrop of these projectiles and their interceptors exploding. Most of them, in fact, almost all of them, were headed towards the Negev.
Yes.
That was absolutely ridiculous. And what a low, unimpressive. This is what strikes me about Israel. It's definitely not the country I grew up in. I left when I was 19. But the low, the banality of the evil, these crass idiots that front this terrorist state is absolutely shocking.
The thing is, Alana, he said that the Islamic Republic of Iran doesn't care about Muslims. The clue's in the name. Of course they bloody care about Muslims. They're Islamic. It is focused all around around Islam. So I didn't think that even made sense to nothing that I've seen about this makes
well
sense.
I think he was making the point that look, that they are exploding. Maybe he was making that there was no rationale to his case. It might have been if he could have proven that the projectiles were exploding above Muslim communities above East Jerusalem or whatnot, but he couldn't make the case. He just thought everybody was stupid. But this, speaking about caring about Muslim lives, this as he's murdering and killing and maiming
that's the old point. Yeah.
A civilian population in Gaza. And just at the same time, during the whole performative project of Iran sending these projectiles, drones. Apparently, the West Bank, villages in the West Bank, were looted and raided by settlers accompanied by Israeli military. That was something to say. We are protecting Muslim lives, and the Iranians aren't. While you're doing this, I mean, David, tell me, do they think the world is stupid, or have we earned the right to be considered by Israel stupid? What do you think?
That's a very good question. I think the answer is possibly a bit of both. You know, I think the media is stupid. The mainstream media is blind and stupid, and I think that that can then be manipulated. And I think that as well. But Alana, I want to ask you: do you think if Israel does a retaliation that they've been talking about to the, where do you think that will lead? What do you think Iran will then do? Where can
This is scary. That's why I actually do think it's Israel, obviously, with the attack on, what do you think the purpose of the attack on the consulate in Syria was? Why, there's no doubt that it did not let the Americans know. It did not. And in fact, that these stupid idiots, you know, you've seen these IDF commanders, they're entirely unimpressive in their so-called operation against women and children. Unimpressive. We've seen their videos uploaded, promiscuously uploaded, the most pitiful and ugly things by this rather undisciplined military. So we've seen these people scramble after the attack on the consulate in Damascus to say that Netanyahu didn't know. And mysteriously, apparently, he went into hospital. So what do you think about that whole, what was the intention of Israel in doing such a provocative?
It's really strange, Alana. It's almost like Israel wants World War III. It's almost like that. And then you think, why would they want that? And then it's like, well, they don't want anything that the U.S. wouldn't sign off on, because I don't believe although some people might argue that, well, Israel will do what it wants. I mean, maybe that's what you think. Maybe Israel doesn't give a damn what Washington, D.C. thinks or what Joe Biden thinks. Maybe that is actually, Alana, a central illusion that some people think, but they need to have Washington on board. But maybe they don't, which I think is what you're saying.
Don't you think that this was an attempt to draw the neoconservatives, and now I would not have said so But Gaza, to me, is the backdrop to everything. It has made people the world over, myself included, absolutely disabused us about any illusions or delusions that we've held about Israel. I mean, I grew up in the place, and I'm pretty much supportive of Israel, other than my language in recent essays about Gaza. A lot of the language is taken from earlier columns about the operations in 2006, 2014. I'm principally anti-unjust wars, but I never doubted the whole idea of Israel. But I think that looking at what they've done and how Jewish supremacism has been acted out against women and children, 80% of the casualties, or 70% of the structures in Gaza, in the Gaza Strip, have been eliminated. 80% of the casualties are civilians. Looking at that, I have no doubt that you're speaking about an out-of-control, reckless country, because the left, the progressive left, likes to speak about Netanyahu. This is a right-wing problem. It's Netanyahu. Change him over to Benny Gantz, or one of the so-called. Yeah. But they are officiating in a war cabinet altogether. Mm. And Benny Gantz and the country itself. I've looked at the polls for my book on foreign policy, which I'm working on now.
Yeah,
the country's behind the IDF. It's not behind Bibi Netanyahu. But it's behind the IDF. And this is, let me ask you what you think about this statistic. The Israel Democracy Institute has published a survey the end of March, mid-March. Mm-hmm. One of the questions is to the left, to a left cohort and a Israeli cohort on the right, do you think that any mercy should be shown to the Palestinians in executing the so-called operation? The left, 47%, says no mercy. That's the left. Mm. 99% of the right says show no mercy.
Mm.
Are they, answer me this, are they can they see what's being done to Gazans?
So is Israel a rogue nation?
Gone rogue for sure. Yeah, Israel's rogue. Israel's a terrorist country. This is not in our interest, because a lot of conservatives have pointed out to me that in my recent essays about Gaza, I've made reference to international law. Mm-hmm. International law, we don't recognize the United Nations, but my position about the Constitution, any law, to the extent that it adheres to the natural law, to the extent it's good,
mm-hmm.
you know, yeah. and the same with our constitution. Much of it has been buried on the rubble of statute and precedent. You know, it's just buried under rubbish. But to the extent the constitution echoes ancient natural law, to the extent it's wonderful. The same thing with natural law. Much of the law of war, okay, it doesn't go as far as I would like, as far as just war. But a lot of it is principled and based on natural law. For instance, proportionality, Israel has violated that. 1,200 people dead, over 100,000 murdered and maimed in Gaza. Right? Mm. Proportionality. The principle of distinction in the laws of war. You cannot do what they've done with the crass, disgusting AI. What do you think about that? Lump entire civil. You want to get one operative, and you're not even sure that this one operative is indeed Hamas. Oh, he works for the electricity department. His name is Mohammed. And there are two Mohammeds, no more, no matter. We're going to bring down the building with AI, with the Where's My Daddy program and the Gospel program. Mm. Obscenely titled, David. It's like Lolita porn of war. Where's My Daddy? I'm talking about the AI. What do you think about that?
Well, as I've said to you before, I mean, I lived through 3-4 decades of terrorism. And so I totally understand the proportionality argument that you're saying. At no point ever here in where I live did we ever say, right, you know, in that particular housing estate or development, we know there's one bad guy, so we'll wipe out the whole housing estate.
You didn't.
Never did that. Never happened. There's obviously a very clear moral reason why that should never happen. So it is strange. But again, another question.
Why do you think that Israel has seen fit to wipe out civility and international norms that we hold as part of the human family? You know, thou shalt not murder, commandment number 6. It has exclusion clauses for Jews.
Yeah, but a lot of the international community support Israel, don't they?
Yes.
Why is that?
Say something about that.
That's weird, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. As someone who despises the international community, I find this very disturbing that they're all rallying behind Netanyahu. And they must surely see the same stuff that we see.
What do you make of this? I mean, it hasn't always been the case.
No, it hasn't. No, if we were having this conversation 10 years ago, Alana, I don't think it would have been quite
this. What do you think? I mean, I know you have a plethora of interesting theories that I often don't even imagine in my wildest dreams. What do you think is behind the blind support for Israel's actions, industrial scale mass murder, I call it, in genocidal mass murder in Gaza,
and
population eviction. Do you remember we did a podcast and I said, I can't believe it. I came across this document in magazine Plus 972. I read it in Hebrew. I read it in English. Yeah. I read it with incredulity and I don't believe the population eviction document. But it was true. Yeah. All these things about Israel have turned out to be true. As you and I will cover the October 7 commission, or at least investigation, and you can see what is probably the execution of the Hannibal injunction by Israeli helicopters. What do you make of what we've seen of Israel and the support for these actions?
Do you know, again, Alana, it's such a massive topic. I'll tell you, I did a podcast last week, a show last week, with an architect from San Francisco called Richard Gage. And we were talking about 9/11 and the way the buildings were brought down. And he certainly doesn't buy into the official narrative. But one of the things about what Richard was saying to me was that he sees similarities between what happened on 9/11 and what's happening in Gaza. He sees similarities in terms of very dark powers doing things which are essentially anti-human, almost inconceivable to normal people like you and me and those watching and listening to us. But they're able to do it with sort of almost a glee, certainly an indifference. But that's what Richard said to me. He thinks there's similarities between, because his view is the Twin Towers were brought down, as was World Building 7. They were brought down, controlled demolition by the US military powers. That's what he says. And I'm not disagreeing with him, Alana. And he thinks that what's happening in Gaza is of a similar proportion, let's say, in terms of the malignancy behind it and the powers behind it. He places America in the ring as well. Now, that might be wrong.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure. Supplying the munitions and material, definitely.
That's
also
the point,
Running cover in terms of the propaganda and the diplomacy. Oh, there's everything's above all. I mean, that Kirby gentleman, an absolute fuss. Oh, we've looked at international law. There's no violations here. Are they trying indeed to move the goalpost and sunder any kind of convention that we might have?
Well, I think what we suffer from is such an evil regime in Washington.
It's left or right, it doesn't matter.
Well, it doesn't matter. No, it's exactly. It doesn't irrelevant. It's just essentially.
What does Galloway say? Your fantastic.
George Galloway, George, gorgeous George. Well, I mean, he got himself
two cheeks of the same ass.
He did. Yeah, he did. He did say that. Yeah. And he's got a good way with words. You know, I've done discussions with George over the years. And yeah, I mean, he picked up on the fact that there's obviously one of the other things about this is all this stuff that's going on with Israel, Iran, and in Gaza with Palestinians. It's triggered a thing worldwide, hasn't it? I mean, you're bound to have seen it in Seattle and elsewhere. These massive public demonstrations against Israel that's being triggered.
Against what Israel's doing in Gaza.
Yeah. But Alana, in my life, I don't think I've ever seen this scale of protest.
But you've never seen the scale of I think what Israel has done in Gaza is proportionate to the scale of...
That's a good point.
Never seen, as I said, mainly, my work has been America first. I have written about Israel, but it's never been from the... I don't lie to myself, but I clearly... There was a big lie going on, and it's been shattered. A big lie about Israel. Mm. And it's been shattered in Gaza. Suddenly, you see the entrails of the Jewish state, the supremacism, the idea that no life matters other than Jewish life, or else how? You were the first person to say to me when we did the October 7, before the IDF invaded Gaza, you said, we do not believe on hard truth in collective punishment. Those were your words, preemptive. And I said, of course not, and then we left it at that. Mm. Never thinking that this is what's been happening on a smaller scale in all Israel's incursions. We never thought anything of it. They told us, oh, Hamas, Shield, all this nonsense. Now we see the entrails of this, of the Jewish state are laying bare.
Yeah.
You see,
I think, Alana, certainly since 2020, the world has gone through a period of reevaluation and some might say an awakening. Before that time, I didn't challenge the likes of Big Pharma, you know, Big Tech, all the stuff you've written about. I didn't challenge those things particularly because I was thinking about other stuff. But now everything's up to be challenged. And yes, that includes like the legitimacy of the Israeli state itself. I think there's an issue there.
Because they do want to, they obviously want to evict 2.1 or 2 million people from the Gaza Strip, which they've done. They've herded them in the most diabolical manner from the north to the south, and now they're threatening to bombard them. Netanyahu still has said he's going to amplify. They're already bombing civilians in Rafah. And then what? What will happen with these people? What will happen? They are not allowing, there's no doubt that they are not allowing aid to come in. The easiest way, as I said in my last essay, the most strategic and economically viable ways to open the North and to just, you know, if Biden had any proverbial mail bits, he would instruct Israel he would commandeer the two airports they have, Ben Gurion and Sderot, I think. Yeah. He would be landing massive 747 cargo planes and other military cargo planes and just on a loop getting them into Gaza. That's what he would be doing, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't do that. And when are we going to build a port? Well, Gaza did have a little port. It also had arable land. We didn't know that. All we knew was the propaganda out of Israel, David. They don't grow anything. They're this, they're that. Arable land, strawberries, a lot of stuff they were growing. Arable land is gone. The port is gone. Everything is gone.
Yeah. But the thing, well, one of the things I object to as well is, Alana, that suggestion that the 2.1 million or whatever, maybe they could all leave entirely the region and come to Europe. I've got news. We don't want any. Zero.
Well,
no refugees.
I ask you, what do you think of Benjamin Netanyahu? Because that's what he's backing on.
I know. And he might get it, because it's almost like Israel has a power over countries, well, like the European Union, France, Germany. It seems to have a power.
Mesmerized.
But that worries me, because that means, gosh, could we get a couple of million Palestinians rocking up in, you know, Berlin?
I would not say London. No, because we have allowed this to happen to them. But the Palestinian people don't want to leave what they think of as their lands.
That's their land. Yeah, I agree.
If you saw some of the, we've never seen, what did you think about some of the architecture? They've destroyed hundreds of mosques. They've destroyed ancient Byzantine churches. They've destroyed all their education system, primary, secondary, tertiary, the lot. They've killed thought leaders and intellectuals. They've killed doctors, murdered doctors as they were operating on babies. So clearly, even when you rebuild without your you know, the people that make society, run, without your major, you know, all of the formative figures that inspire you, what happens to society? What do they go back to? How do they rebuild? How?
Well, because I don't think the Israeli plan is for them to go back and rebuild. I don't think that. I think they do want displacement. I think they want displacement into probably Europe, I think. But, I don't know. I can't see Egypt. I really. Can you see Egypt saying, come on in?
Egyptians and the Jordanians have clearly colluded with the West and are really puppet.
Yeah.
What do you think about the response of, it used to be, if you and I are old enough to remember, when Israel would do anything, then we'd have all the Arab nations. There'd be embargoes and there'd be this and that, and there'd be a response from the Arab nations. There's nothing. There's just complicit, echoing of Western policy. And look at Jordan, was even there to intercept. Well, that's
I saw that. But that's got to be the part. That's got to be the hand of the United States, hasn't it? Over those nations, basically telling them, don't go against Israel at this point. You know. But I mean, where do you think the end goal is, Alana? Where will this end, do you think, with Israel? Because we've got the standoff with Iran.
That's a good question. Yeah, and what you were saying, you're not in our last episode. I was sort of not quite sure that there would be a conflagration, an international conflagration. And you said yes, and I think you were right, David, because Israel has promised its public that it will retaliate against Iran. Even though Iran said the action is finished, tit for tat, we'll overlook all the assassinations and the sabotage and the malware and the ongoing, all the time ongoing against the Iranian, Iranians. Yeah. And let's end it here. And Biden said, enjoy your victory, basically. Just enjoy the win, said to Bibi Netanyahu, stop it. But they are talking retaliation. So Israel wants to draw America into defending it, because you can see what happens when American, intercepting technology is not there to help Israel. What will happen? And when France and the UK are not there? So because America and the West have not put up any objection to Israel, it now has carte blanche to do as it wishes. And that's what worries me. What happens? You know, China is the Eastern, the global South is definitely going to be activated.
Mm.
It's very dangerous. And Israel is precipitating all this.
You see, but by the same token, I mean, we talked about this, Alana, more than 2 years ago. I mean, we had a NATO engineered sort of proxy war with Russia going on in Ukraine. That was very much NATO, which in turn leads back to the same actors in Washington and elsewhere. And it's like we just go through year after year, and the end goal seems to be just conflagration, war. What is it good for? Well, it's good for making lots of money, and it covers lots of problems as well, doesn't it? So I don't know. And don't forget,
you're right. No argument there.
Yeah. And we're in a U.S. election.
Or is there help from the state?
You know, so I don't know, Alana, I just see more and more chaos. I think that's my word I would use, engineered chaos. But I did hear the Israeli general saying that they will strike back against Iran. And I'd be surprised if that doesn't happen, but maybe it's just bluster. I don't know.
I think we can believe them. I mean, believe your lying eyes, you know?
Yeah.
But Israel was trying to say, oh, well, you know, Hamas ministry is lying. There's not really 35,000 dead. And then every single human rights organization in the world, the most uninvolved, merciful, good people, everybody has confirmed these numbers. Satellite radar from space has confirmed that Gaza is gone. Oh, no, don't believe them. Well, I say to you, as Chris Pryor said on his stand-up, believe your lying eyes. I think believe Israel, that they are intent on drawing the United States. They want Iran gone. They want regime change. That's the what do you think? Don't you think the neoconservative now?
We have 100%.
So what do you think about AIPAC? Yeah. You know, there's so many, you know, people have been banished. You can't say a word. I've never lived... I mean, when I began writing, I was writing against Bush's war.
Yeah.
I was marginalized. I lost syndication. I lost all opportunities. And, you know, I too was approached by all these loathsome, of course, not Benjamin Shapiro. He was in short pants doing his fiddler on the roof, you know, in short pants. He was tiny when I began. But certainly some of the other odious neoconservatives, you know, I was approached and flirted with opted out of war on supporting Bush's neoconservative. So I lost, but so many other people. But then you could at least publish about, you know, Bush's war. You could still get published. You cannot say a word against Israel. What do you think about that? Speak to AIPAC as well.
I mean, I think that's very much a U.S. thing, because here in the U.K. you can speak. And people do speak very much against what's going on. In fact, I would say that's the standard operating procedure. It's intensely critical of Israel, and writers can get content out and comment.
Are you sure, David?
Sorry,
I want you to carry on with your thread, but there is a conservative, a Tory. I was going to bring him up, but I don't remember his name. He floated the idea in public, a conservative, a Tory, right? He floated the idea that the Jewish lobby has too much influence in the UK.
Yeah.
The Jewish Board of Deputies is about to have him unelected. So is it really freer in the UK? Is there no influence, subterranean influence, maybe not so subterranean influence? Do you know what is his name?
I can't remember the name. I can't remember his name, but that's entirely the case, Alana. There's definitely that level of control in the UK as well. I'm just saying, I think it's a bit less than in the US, a bit less. But to go back on topic again, I think that they wanted regime change in Moscow and Russia, and they've tried to get it and it's failed. I think now it's regime change in Iran, which, let's be honest, they've wanted for years. You and I go back a long way, Alana. They've wanted that for a hell of a long time, as much as they've wanted it in Moscow, you know, certainly for 30, 40 years. But it's like, is this the moment to get it? I don't know. I don't think they will, by the way, but they might try.
I think you might be right. I mean, I was just looking at older columns of mine from 2012. Can you believe under Obama was leaked actually to the Daily Mail online, the fact that there were the military industrial congressional complex was working on 3.6 ton MOP, what they were calling, massive ordnance penetrator.
Yeah.
And that was, to quote the Daily Mail online in 2012, designed to take out fortification built by Iran to hide their nuclear weapons. Mm. So they've been planning, and then you had Barack Obama was doing this. This is under a so-called liberal president. And then Barack Obama moved with the SWIFT program to bar Iran from, you know, international global SWIFT banking. And then there were the sanctions under Barack Obama.
So actually, that's like a replay of what happened to Russia in the past couple of years. Exactly the same.
Only Iran was the forerunner
for
this kind of operation.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So if you oppose that, which we did, and then you have to oppose this as well. And I do see, you know, that the demonization of Iran, it's shocking in the media and the commentariat, just like the demonization of Russia. Like you mentioned Ben Shapiro, little Ben Shapiro, and always so macho about, oh, yes, he would personally go on a flight and over to Moscow. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pathetic stuff.
I like what Max Blumenthal says. I don't know if you've watched the Grey Zone, great show. As he says, so untalented. Such the neoconservatives are so untalented. And I would add that they are, I think I wrote about it in 2005, that they, I think it was a column called Pundits Heal Themselves. It doesn't matter how badly they fail, how they drag us along into these failed, horrible, evil policies. Yeah. They always come back for an encore.
Yes.
Always for an encore. They never lose. How is that so?
Well, it's almost like you know, it won't be the radical left that destroys America. It'll be the neocons that destroy America, because they posture as one thing, do something else. They never learn. They're like the Bourbons of old. You know, they never forget.
Yeah, the radical left, David, the progressive left is very much, this is why I really want to see, I mean, I belong to the old right tradition, started with Murray Rothbard, Lou Rockwell, Ron Paul, and our principles, our anti-war principles are very solid. They're based much better than those of the progressives because, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, and the progressives now have been excellent on Gaza. You have so many good programs coming out of the UK and the same in the United States. In fact, you actually even have more than we do. Very good people in the progressive. And they think exactly like the old hard right does. And if only there could be more collaboration between, because foreign policy, don't you think that is the biggest challenge?
Foreign policy?
I mean, we could talk about woke and we could talk about systemic this, system, you know, all the, all the woke stuff that awful people you know, Chris Rufo or Matt Walsh, all proven to be absolute neocons, worthless. They tinker around the edges. They speak about woke. They speak about systemic racism. But it all, when push comes to shove, it's all about foreign policy. It really is.
I think that's what exposes them all, Alana. Because, as you say, a lot of them are very good on a lot of these more peripheral issues. They are. Like Matt Walsh, for example. He's good on the woke stuff. I find it entertains me. But
if you don't know your left from your right, if you don't know thou shalt not murder, what the fuck are you? If you don't know your Ten Commandments. So I always say, I mean, I think you said to me there are other issues other than Gaza. I see Gaza as so central, and I was trying to think why. It's because, let's say you had a serial killer just in your neighborhood. I know you have a big neighborhood, lots, very, you know, spacious, not very many. Let's say it was just confined to your neighborhood. Mm. It would be high alert. Someone taking out people every day in your neighborhood. And there was, you know, nobody said anything, and you basically were doomed to extermination. This is happening on a much larger scale. The first, as Ron Unz put it, the first genocidal mass murder televised campaign we've ever seen. We've never seen it televised like this. So this is why it is so important. And it's the acid test for the worth of these people, and they are worthless. And it reminds me how worthless they are. When war comes, it's sort of the acid test for everything.
Oh, listen, I agree with you in that, Alana. Although I would also say that COVID was the acid test as well. But yeah. They always fail. That's why people like us, we're marginalized because we're consistent and we don't fail.
But David, why is COVID the acid test? COVID and Gaza? Because COVID, you had all those issues, those natural rights being violated, the right to make a living, the right to make decisions about your body, the right to open up an extension of your right to self-ownership is your right to make a living, shuttering of your businesses, confiscations, your inability to worship. Those are all natural rights. The same thing in Gaza, natural rights on a criminal scale being violated, the same thing with COVID.
So you're right
to bring up COVID. So you're right that some of them were good on COVID. But did they ever make a natural rights argument?
No, they didn't. And that's the point. Natural rights are non-negotiable. That's it. There's no negotiation. But let me ask you, we kind of agreed that the current Israeli government, and not just the government, but the opposition as well, like nothing's going to change. It's going to continue the way that it's going. So how do you think that impacts into the broader global Jewish diaspora? I mean, do you think, broadly speaking, most Jews are happy with what's happening?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I have very little contact. I know that, it's kind of close to the bone. You don't want to speak.
Yeah.
You don't want to speak about your relatives, you know.
Okay.
I think my dearest mum is on board. She's very disgusted. I could say that about that one relative of mine, my mother. She's seen it and she's appalled and disgusted and feels terrible as a Jew. How many others? There are very good progressive left Jewish organizations. I haven't seen in Israel so much the objection to the actual operation and the war. Yeah. I've seen movements sort of wanting to humanize occupation and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I'm not knowledgeable on that. I really defer to other people. I haven't been examining Israel over. I mean, mainly been America first and foreign. I haven't been writing about Israel at all. It always seemed such a small, issue, so what's it gonna do to Jews? I don't know. What do you think? I think it's made us it's made me ashamed. It's sort of put a target on us.
Oh, it certainly has. Yeah, it's put a target on every Jewish person around the world, which is, but again, entirely predictable that would happen. And that's why I go back to my first principles in this. Why would they do that? Why would they do this? Everything that I see playing out, Alana, it's relatively predictable, and we know if there's an Israeli attack against Iran, it'll be predictable potentially what the consequence of that would be. But it carries on. Sometimes, I don't know, is there a fog of war here? Is there a fog of war, or is it just malignant actors determined to do what they want to do?
So what do you mean it's predetermined or planned?
Because I think the conflict with Iran, particularly with Iran, we've both agreed they've wanted that for a long time. I'm talking about America. America's wanted that, right? So now it's going to get what it wants. So,
yeah, you're probably right. And I just wanted to ask you about this. What struck me, I mean, there are very few parties that are standing up for the Palestinians. I wondered what you thought about the Houthis who were doing that, and this word proxies, calling them proxies. I mean, what do you think? Proxies of Iran rather than they might be financed by Iran, and I have no doubt about that, as Iran has to maintain a balance of power, at least in the region, right?
Yeah.
Regional. But what do you think about the Houthis and what they've been trying to achieve and how our media has been portraying them?
Well, you see, this is the thing. There's a very interesting discussion to be had about, you know, the historical conflict between the Hutsis and the Tutsis. The historical
the Houthis, right?
I think we've been given false history there. That's the first thing. And so, again,
the Houthis are the Yemeni, the insurgents who are trying to block the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. And
yeah, so they're looking after global the regional interests. What's the United States doing? Yeah, it's doing exactly the same. The US cannot conceivably talk on this one. They're in no position to lecture anybody on this here. So I just think it's all a mess. But I honestly do think, Alana, it's designed to create chaos, create fear, and keep it going. They've been at this for 4 years, continued chaos. And they don't care. I mean, it seems to me that...
Who do you mean?
Well, that's a good question. That's a very good question. They.
Let's narrow the pronouns.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I don't use pronouns. Yeah, I mean, I think they are essentially... I think it's a globalist hegemony. I think that's who they are. And I don't think it's one sort of a particular group. I think it's... a small number of people, very, very powerful individuals, and I think they can direct what happens. That's what I think. And so I think some of them may be in US, some of them may be in other places around the world as well. Some of them may be in, you know, Israel. I think that's possible as well. And I think, like, Alana, I can never get away from the fact that what sickened me about Israel was, in particular, was Netanyahu treated the Israeli people as lab rats. He got them 6 doses of Pfizer's jab. That's how much he loves Israel. Do you know what I mean? Like, your eyes have to be open when you see that. Basically, trying to genocide his own people with pharma jabs.
And so, would anyone be surprised? When I read that there might be some new restrictions on COVID in Israel. That was a police state.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And at that point, Alana, that's where my eyes started to. I was, broadly speaking, pretty supportive of Israel. But I couldn't be supportive of a regime that treats its own people like lab rats in pursuance of big foreign profits. That's exactly what Bibi got up to with his pals in Pfizer. So this is what I talk about, the awakening, Alana. It's happening across. I know you want to talk, the Gaza issue is a huge one, and I understand that and respect that fully. But I think there are other issues as well to do with some of the COVID sort of fallout stuff and so much of the gender stuff, and it's not totally peripheral, you know, because if you destroy what a man and a woman is, you're destroying the essence of society, which unfortunately actually Israel goes along with.
Well, the IDF is very woke. Must be good because they're woke. And I think there's some in addition to so many of the images uploaded of ransacking pitiful people's homes and playing with their underwear and their, you know, you think of people who are dispossessed or dead and you're playing with their intimate. It's just horrible. But in addition to that, you have marriage proposals being filmed and uploaded by the IDF between two guys. So it's a very woke military. Yeah.
Yeah. It's woke. It's decadent West. It's woke, decadent, morally bankrupt left. And it's Israel as every bit as much as it's the US or UK, you know.
What you make about David, the care that the state shows its own people, you know, it's a really good point, but there's also something even sicker. We ourselves love to differentiate between the state and the people, but it really is one sick amalgam, because it's not only that we get the government we deserve, we are.
Yeah.
With exceptions along the bell curve, we are the government, because look at the support, not so much for the changing, this us cheek is twitching or that us, not so much for the changing of the guard, but for the actions instantiated in the state's military. There is broad support for the murder and eviction of Gazans in Israel. How do you explain that? This is what I struggle with.
And
this has brought me in terms of my life, having left Israel at 19, yeah, to return, this has sort of brought me, I wouldn't talk about it, but this has brought me full circle in my reckoning and who I am vis-a-vis Israel.
Yeah,
but what do you make of that? What do you make of that? How do you make of that?
I can't possibly relate in the way that you do, because obviously, you know, for you obviously lived in Israel and you have that deep connection. But I, in a way, I'm in a similar orbit to yourself. And I think that I am now very questioning of essentially everything. I worry about the sheer evil intent of the people, or of what drives all this. Some of it, I mean, Alana, we get into all kinds of conversations in this one. It's almost like it goes beyond the physical realm. Is there other aspects to this? Because the sheer evil of the stuff that you see playing out, as you say, I mean, everything's televised and people can watch it with on their phones, and as people are blown into a million pieces. It's been happening in Ukraine for 2 years. There's been a bit of, you and I said back in end of Feb 2022, this needs to stop. There's no need for conflict here.
Yeah.
2 years on, half a million Ukrainians dead, probably the same Russians. The soil in eastern Ukraine, I'm sure, washed in blood. That's like a ritual blood sacrifice, I think. That's what I think.
Interesting. I had the perspective that this was an unjust war, with justified reasons. Russia had reasons to do it.
Yes, it had.
It was prosecuting an unjust war because obvious reasons. We went over that.
Yeah, we did.
However, I think it would be very interesting for our next discussion. Maybe we're going to have a very interesting guest next week.
Yes.
To compare civilian casualties that Russia has inflicted with the civilian casualties Israel has inflicted. I think you will be shocked. Mm. You will be shocked at how much more ethical the Russians turn out to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and yet how demonized the Russians are as well. Right, I think on that note, with the teaser of more to come next week, Alana, what we'll do is we'll wrap this one up.
And please subscribe, please like our stream and subscribe to our channel.
Yeah. If you enjoy the conversations here, share this amongst yourselves, send it to friends, whatever, and make sure you subscribe here on Rumble, where we at least can speak our minds freely, Alana. You know, sometimes it hasn't always been possible to have this level of direct honesty, but it's the essence of everything we do. We have to be honest with what we say. So look, folks, if you've enjoyed this, hit a like, hit a subscribe, drop a comment if you want to do that as well. Alana and I will always respond to you, if as long as it's civil, we'll do that. And Alana, I'll thank you for tonight. Great to see you again.
Lovely.
And as you've intimated, our plan is to be back next week.
With
an interesting guest, folks. So we just leave that hanging in the air. And that's it from Alana and from myself tonight. Good night.